Welcome back to our first Port of Call podcast series. This is where we interview Practice Forte's esteemed professionals and understand why they are the first port of call for clients in distress. Today, we have with us Mr. Christian von Bombach. Christian is a mediator specializing in intercultural mediation and cross-border family mediation. He has many accreditations under his belt, from the International MIKK to the German Association of Family Mediation, Japan International Mediation Center in Kyoto. Now, let's invite Christian to join us all the way from Berlin, Germany. Hi,
hello.
Christian.
Hello, Chloe.
Now, Christian, to start off, please share with us a bit about yourself.
Yes, thank you. So my name is Christian. I'm a mediator. I specialize in intercultural and international mediations. I work with international teams and with binational families. I'm based in Germany, Berlin right now, but I lived in Japan for over 6 years. Yeah, and I also teach mediation at universities in Germany, as well as the Osaka University in Japan. And I do mediation workshops and trainings in Germany and internationally. And I'm an affiliate of Practice Forte, and I'm very proud about this. So this international network for me is very important. And I really like to work and cooperate with Practice Forte. So I'm really glad to be here today and have this interview with you. Thank you for inviting me.
We're glad to have you here, Christian. Now, to start off with our very first question, Christian, why do you think a mediator should be the first port of call for parties seeking to resolve a dispute?
Yeah, I think mediation is effective, efficient, and affordable. And the parties stay in control of what is important to them. They don't refer their matters to a court. They discuss about it between themselves and make the decisions in the end. So they have a great flexibility and control over the outcome. And most importantly, mediation preserves and even improves the relationship between the parties. The relationships between humans is most important. And to come to a good conclusion in any conflict, you have to talk to each other. And you have to find solutions that are based on trust and mutual understanding. And for doing so, mediation is the perfect approach.
I completely agree with you. Thank you for that, Christian. Now, let's talk about your work as an international mediator. What are the kind of cases that you normally mediate?
Yes, I have two branches, I would call it. So one is that I work in the business environment with teams, maybe international teams, where the team members have different backgrounds. They come from different countries or different professional backgrounds. And I help them to improve the communication, solve disputes and conflicts, and improve their ability to work effectively together as a team and reach their goals. And the other branch is family mediation. I work with couples and families who try to resolve their conflicts. And there I'm especially trained as a cross-border family mediator by the German NGO MIG. And in international family matters, they can become quite complicated. And mediation is a good approach to support families and parents to come to good solutions in their interest, but also in the best interest of their children.
Thank you, Christian. Now, let's talk a bit about your work as an international cross-border family mediator first. So these kind of cases typically involve the Hague Convention.
Yes.
Now, for our listeners, Christian, could you share with us what the Hague Convention is?
Yeah, just briefly, the Hague Convention is an international treaty on... It is called the Hague Convention on the Civil Aspects of International Child Abduction, or in short, the Hague Abduction Convention. And this international treaty provides a legal framework that assures the fast and safe return of children who have been abducted or retained in another country. When binational couples have a crisis and one of the parents wants to return to their home country, sometimes they take the children with them without the consent of the other parent. Or what's quite often the case is that they go to their home country on holiday and then they decide not to return.
Thank you, Christian. And your answer shows why you are the first port of call for clients in distress in these type of situations. Christian, could you share with us how a mediator would work with a lawyer in such a situation?
Right. So when you think about these international families who break up and one of the parents decides to go home without the consent of the other parents, these are crisis situations. They don't make this decision easily. They are in a very desperate situation where they feel they have no other choice than taking this step. And the Hague proceeding, the Hague Convention, would allow for the return of the children, but nothing else is settled. The relationship is not settled. All the problems are not gone. They have very important decisions to make. And on a legal basis, it will be very difficult to reach a solution. But beyond that, they need to sit down together and find a solution for that. And this, they will not, in most cases, they cannot achieve this in court.
Thank you, Christian. So what you've described is a rather complex but essentially peaceful approach to the resolution of disputes. Now, I'm just wondering, how do you identify with the peace approach and how do you promote this to your clients and in mediation settings, especially when things can get really heated?
Yes. As a mediator, I often experience firsthand how conflicts tend to escalate very quickly. Especially in family matters, the parents, they are desperate and they find themselves in a downward spiral of escalation. It gets severe and severe and the fight goes on and they are hurt and they hurt each other and then they hurt their children. So it goes down and down and down and down and down. And a limited amount of options they have. So one option is to fight against each other. And they can fight using words, they can fight in front of court. And maybe one of them wins. But what normally happens is that they just hurt each other and the conflict escalates. The other option is that they just turn around and go away. They just stop talking to each other and don't see each other again. In case of families, this is normally not an option because they want and they have to take care of their children. So they are connected through their children. So this is not an option. And another option is what we try to achieve in mediation is that they don't fight to hurt each other. They don't fight to win and they don't go away, but they stay in touch and try to find a new common ground. So they try to resolve their issues peacefully. And by doing so, this gives them the chance to develop a new relationship as parents and to evolve their personality as well. So by this peaceful approach, they can gain a lot out of it. And the non-peaceful approach often leads to a further escalation of the conflict. So for me, I strongly believe that this peaceful approach is so important to many, many people in desperate situations. I believe the world needs more of this peaceful approach. That's why I so strongly support Practice 40s to develop new forms of conflict resolution and peaceful approach. And I think this is really, really important and helpful in our modern world. And in this complex world, we have complex struggles, complex conflicts, and there are no easy solutions. And the legal framework often leads to simple answers, which are not really helpful. And mediation allows to find flexible, creative, and very personal solutions. So that's why I believe that mediation is a good approach for the conflicts of our modern world.
So I'm just wondering, because the situations you've described are couples who have gone into a conflict, parents who have gone head to head, toe to toe, when it comes to relocation. And this is after they've relocated or so-called abducted the child in question. Now, taking a step back, how would you advise those intending or seeking to relocate? And what are the things that they should take note of before the relocation happens?
Right. So the relocation often is the last step in a long series of struggles. And before that, there come different kinds of misunderstanding or situations that lead to unhappiness. So they are in a situation where they are not happy. They struggle in their environment or they struggle in their relationship. And the solution to that lies in communicating openly with each other. And in many situations, this has not happened before the step of the relocation. So they don't find a way to expressing their feelings, expressing what they really wish for or why they are struggling. And then as a last step, they decide to relocate, to flee from the situation. But this normally does not make the situation better. But again, it's one step of this escalation. So I think when you come to a situation where you feel you want to relocate, you want to change your life situation, you want to start new, I think the first step is really reflecting on why you want to relocate. What do you want to achieve with that? And then thinking about different options of how to solve and achieve what you want to achieve. Because there are different options that you can take. And then realizing that as a family, you need to make decisions together as a family. However difficult they may be, families are so strongly connected that if they fight against each other, they can make each other's lives very miserable. But if they support each other in their decisions, they can really help each other. And as families, it's always interrelated. It's a give and take in some form. So I know that in many situations, it's difficult to talk openly. But I strongly believe it's always worth it. So I would say the best timing for a mediation is not after the relocation, but before. It's acknowledging that you need to make some decisions and you need to talk about these decisions. And if it's difficult to talk about it on your own, then get the help of a third party, a mediator who is neutral, who supports both of you to express what you are feeling, express what your hopes and fears for the future are, and leads you through a structured process where you can create different solutions and then jointly decide on your next steps. Part of this mediation process is always to get advice from other experts as well. This could be lawyers, this could be child psychologists, and so on. And all of these experts are brought together in the network of Practice 40. So for me as a mediator, it's always good to know that I'm part of an international network with experts in their field who I can refer the parents to, or we can invite them to a mediation and get their opinion. Because as a mediator, I'm not a specialist in all of these aspects. And as I said before, these are always very complex situations that need complex answers. So I see my role as a mediator also to moderate a process where we can bring in different expert perspectives as well. But in the end, the parents will have to make the decisions. I think this is very important to understand about mediation. Many people are not used to that, because many people, if they hear an expert, they feel, okay, the expert should decide. But in mediation, the parents decide, you decide. You know your family best. You know your children best. You know best what you want to achieve. You just need expert information and the time to think about it, and then get a good overview about your different options, and then make the decisions.
I think you've captured the essence of practice forte so beautifully. And I totally agree with you. Multifaceted disputes require multifaceted solutions. And practice forte is the perfect so-called one-stop shop for to address all of these different and varying concerns, from lawyers to mediators to forensic accountants and psychologists. It is such a wonderful organization and network of professionals and experts who can help people resolve their crises.
Right, I totally agree. And all of these parts that come together as in an organization, they're there to support parents in crisis situation. And I think the goal is to empower parents, again, to make decisions, because what happens in a conflict is you lose empathy, you lose the ability to understand each other's perspectives, and you lose the ability to make wise decisions. At some point, if you think about conflict that you have experienced yourself, you will notice that at some point you only react. You just, something happens and then you react, and normally that leads to this escalation. And the goal of the mediation is to provide you with information, with expert information, to give you the opportunity to de-escalate, to think about your situation, to think about your options, and therefore empower you to make good decisions in your best interest and in the interest of your children.
Now, Christine, you mentioned about differing perspectives. And I'm just wondering, earlier on you mentioned two different branches of your work, but they all involve cross-border communication. So dealing with parties from different countries and different cultures. Could you perhaps share with us a bit about your expertise in intercultural communication and how that helps in your cross-border mediations?
Right, yeah. So I lived in Japan for 6 years. I studied Japanese studies as well. So I have this background of cultural studies, and I'm specially trained as an intercultural mediator. And my training as a cross-border family mediator also was about cultural aspects in conflict and mediation. Culture is a very complex term, right? Everybody knows the word, but probably each of us will have a different understanding about what culture is. For me, it's about people's values and beliefs, what is appropriate in their daily lives. So we all grow up in different environments, and this will have an influence on how we see the world and look at the world, and how we behave and how we react in a conflict situation, how we communicate to each other. This can be a source or lead to misunderstandings, right? If we communicate differently, we will have a different understanding of what is being said or what we do or not do. But it can also be a source of understanding, of mutual understanding. If you get a good understanding of where we grew up, what is important to us, what we believe in, then we can understand each other better. And then we can find solutions that suit each other. So as an intercultural mediator, I use cultural perspectives to understand people's situations better. I will ask questions about what is important to them and why it is important to them. And this is related to cultural aspects like language, beliefs, education, and so on. So when we talk about in this international family conflict, it's a lot about the children's education. It's about religious upbringing. It's about the mother tongue that they speak. It's about staying connected to the children. Yeah, and I'm specially trained in using cultural theories about human relationships, communication, to understand what's going on in the situation and finding a way out of it. And I want to mention, when we think about culture, many people think about national culture first. So it's about how do Germans communicate or how do Japanese communicate. And this is part of it. Growing up in Germany, I went to a German school, so this influenced me in a specific way. But it's not all about it. It's not every German is the same. When we think about German culture, we have stereotypes in our head, which do not always apply to individuals. In some sense, I'm very different from the stereotypes, partly because I lived in Japan for so long and I got influenced by Japan. I would say we are always influenced by different groups and different collectives. And these all play a role in mediation as well. So again, it's a complex topic, a complex situation, but it helps us to allow complexity and to understand this complex situation and to find the right solutions for the problems that they face.
So Christian, given the fact that borders are currently closed, how has the pandemic affected the way cross-border mediations are conducted? And how have you personally adapted to these challenges?
Yeah, as we all have experienced, international travel is restricted due to the pandemic. So many people are not able to travel. I have a couple of cases where the pandemic put more pressure on the families and they broke up during this pandemic. For example, parents who traveled to their home countries shortly before the travel restrictions. Then the travel restrictions took effect, and then they were not able to return. Or they had an excuse for not returning because they said, I don't feel safe. I will return after the pandemic is returned. But the other parent was afraid that they won't return. One effect is that it put pressure on families and it led to further escalation in some situations. The other fact is that it's not so easy to physically meet at one place. So we had to rely on online mediation much more than before. Luckily, I do online mediations. I had started doing online mediations before the pandemic already. So it was not totally new to me. But since last year, I've done many more online mediations than before. And I had to develop new skills, try new things online. But I can say now that we had good achievements in online mediations as well. And in some way, it makes it easier to go into mediation for some families, I believe. One thing is, it's easier to meet online, so they don't have to travel to another country. And for some people, I think it makes they feel more comfortable in this online mediation because it would be very stressful for them to meet in one room and then travel to another city, going to room. Where you don't know the mediator, maybe it's easier to first decide, okay, let's meet online. And if it goes well, this can lead to a physical meeting as well, if it's possible. But I think it's a good start and a more than good alternative to the regular mediation. So I really appreciate this possibility to meet online. And I will definitely continue to provide online mediations after the pandemic as well.
Thank you for sharing with us the benefits of online mediation. Now, Christian, just wondering, what motivated you to go into mediation in the first place? And would you consider mediation your calling?
Mm-hmm. I think for many mediators, many people who become mediators, it's a personal matter. So for me, my parents divorced when I was quite young. And the struggle that arose out of this mediation, out of the separation, affected their life, my life, and the life of my brothers and sisters as well. And I'm the youngest son of six. And as one of the younger children, I always tried to facilitate between my parents and also my older siblings. My wish was that they get together in peaceful matters. So I started to mediate quite early as a young age. And then, and this influenced me and my view on conflict strongly. So I always tried to facilitate between people who are arguing. So this is in some way, this is part of me and part of my life and has been with me for a long time. And then I studied Japanese studies and I lived abroad, and I always saw myself as someone who builds bridges between Germany and Japan. And then I wanted to improve my ability to do so. I wanted to improve my ability to help people to communicate effectively across borders, across cultures. And then I came up with these intercultural mediation education training. And yeah, this perfectly suited what I wanted to do. And so I started this training, and then I found out this is exactly what I want to do. So in one sense, yeah, you could say it's my calling. I think it's important to mention that I don't do this for myself. I do it for my clients. It's a professional service that I provide, and my goal is to support my clients as best as I can. So I think I'm good at it. I'm well trained in doing so. But my goal is to help my clients, and I provide a professional service. So yeah, so my background has led me to a situation where I'm able to do so, and I feel very lucky to do so.
Thank you for sharing with us, Christian. We know you're so well-versed in the Japanese martial art of Aikido. Could you maybe share with us a bit about Aikido and, for instance, what got you into Aikido initially?
Yes. So Aikido is a Japanese form of martial arts. It's quite, in this form, it's quite new, but it's based on traditional old forms of Japanese martial arts. A good friend of mine started to learn Aikido in Germany, and he just took me along, and I really liked the atmosphere, I liked the training, I liked the teacher, and I liked to train with my friends. So this brought me into it. But then in Japan, I went to a very traditional Aikido dojo, the main dojo in Tokyo, and trained together with some of the greatest and main teachers in Japan, and with many Japanese students and international students. And yeah, this really was an exciting experience for myself. And Aikido has a lot of similarities to mediation because it offers a friendly approach to solving conflicts on a physical basis, but also on a metaphysical basis. Through Aikido training, the practitioners should develop their personality and their ability to solve conflicts. And the new approach, the friendly approach about this, is that they protect themselves, of course, as in any martial arts, so to protect them from harm, but not by destroying the opponent, but by respecting him as well, by respecting his energy as well, and trying to work with this energy that is between us, this destructive energy, and transforming it to a peaceful resolution. Maybe this sounds a little bit complex, but if somebody tries to hit me, I have different options. So one option would be to hit him first, right? This is in many traditional martial arts. This is what you do. You evade and hit your opponent so that he will not be able to hit you again. Or I could try to run away. This is quite a good option in many situations. I can run away, but then we lose the contact between each other. I would step aside, take on this energy, add my own energy to it. So lead his arm in the same direction that he intended to go, and then gently lead him to the ground. So in the end, this energy gets transformed. It's not dangerous anymore, but the attacker is not hurt. I respect his intention and I respect him as a human being. And this is something that I think is a good analogy to mediation, where again, we have aggressive energy. We have to protect ourselves from these destructive energies, but I don't want to react in an aggressive way. I want to react in a way that respects the other party, acknowledge them as human beings, and try to find a way, a direction where we can channel the energy where it's not destructive anymore, but leads to a positive outcome where everybody is safe and can reestablish a good relationship. And this is thing also about in Aikido, we always train together in pairs. And it's all about this human relationship in this training environment.
Now, Christian, you've mentioned the pairing up in Aikido, where two partners pair up and they spar or they train together, and there's a beautiful connection that develops that's more than words. Now I'm wondering, is there this same sort of connection when it comes to co-mediators in a mediation setting? Oftentimes, co-mediators can't really communicate directly to one another in front of the parties. So how do they have this synergy where they know how to progress the mediation without divulging too much?
So for me, as mediator with a non-legal background, it's always very valuable to work with a mediator with a legal background. For example, my mediation with Suzanne Tai from Practice Forte, it was very valuable for me to have her with her legal experience in the room. And whenever we had a legal question or a legal matter we needed to discuss, I could rely on Suzanne for her experience. So I really enjoy these co-mediations, especially in cross-border family mediations. Generally, we work in pairs where the mediators have different professional backgrounds. Most often, it's a male mediator and a female mediator, and they have understanding for both cultural backgrounds of the parents. So yeah, for example, I would be in a mediation where one party is from Germany, for example. And together as a co-mediators team, we are better able to understand the whole complexity of the situation with all aspects that are important, legally, psychologically, culturally.
Thank you, Christian. Now, I know our time is almost up, but I just want to ask a quick personal question before we end off. Because you've spoken so fondly of your time in Japan, could you share with us some memorable experiences you had from this time in Japan?
There are so many. I think generally it was a time for me where I could, where I learned a lot about myself, but also about others. It was mostly about personal encounters. So many people helped me in Japan. So the hospitality and friendship I encountered in Japan were just marvelous. And till today, I have many friends and colleagues in Japan that I strongly feel connected. And that's why I want to give something back. I want to provide services where I can support relationships between Japan and Germany and Europe, because from my experience and with my knowledge and my skills, I can help people to bridge these cultural differences and language differences and find good solutions for problems, improve their communication between each other and improve their relationship. And by doing so, we can all gain a lot out of this. And this is true to other international relationships as well. So that's why I think the international network of Practice 40 is so important. And it relies on personal relationships. In the end, it's all about people knowing each other, having experience in each in different countries. It's about the choice. Okay, let's sit together and find new approaches for the problems that we face by supporting each other to solving these issues, to develop as human beings, to solve international disputes and building bridges between different countries.
Thank you so much, Christian. So to our listeners, we hope you've enjoyed our session today. Be sure to check out our previous episodes featuring a private investigator, a family lawyer, a trusted advisor, and a forensic accountant. Tune in next time as we interview more of our professionals and understand why they are your first port of call, just like Christian. For any inquiries, do contact our client care specialist, Sandra, at 6221-3009.